Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we have announcements about some candidate forums coming up in Lemon Grove, Santee, and La Mesa for candidates and issues in those cities, as well as candidates running for Helix Water District Board. Then on our agricultural report, hear about a new law to provide farm workers with more overtime pay. Then we'll tell you why you should be careful if you're walking in the woods starting this weekend in East County. On Green Scene, hear about the hottest August on record and just how long it's been since the last time it got this hot. We'll also have a health alert about a rabid bat found at a popular local tourist attraction. Then on Destination East County, hear about the hottest festivals and events in our region, from the Julian Music Festival to Oktoberfests and more. Our newsmaker interview today is with Helix Water District Director John Linden, who will be talking about his candidacy for re-election and issues of interest to ratepayers. From Public News Service, hear why childhood asthma rates in California are rising. And finally on sports, Liz Alper will have some good news to share about an Aztec soccer star at San Diego State. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. East County Magazine invites you to attend a forum with candidates running for Helix Water District's board and for Lemon Grove mayor. Our forum will be held on Wednesday, September 21st at the beautiful new Lemon Grove Library. You can meet and greet candidates from 5 to 5:30, with the program starting at 5:30 p.m. You'll have an opportunity to meet the candidates, hear their goals for the future, their responses to questions posed by our editor, plus you can bring questions on issues that matter most to you. Lemon Grove will soon have a new mayor, since Mayor Mary Sessom is retiring. All three candidates have agreed to participate in our forum, and they are Councilmembers George Gastel and Raquel Vasquez, as well as Teresa Rosiak, former Chamber of Commerce president. Eight candidates are vying for two seats on the Helix Water District Board, and so far, four of them have RSVP'd that they will participate: incumbent John Linden and challengers Mark Grasick, Dan McMillan, and Luis Tejeda. All have extensive experience in the water business. From water rates to the future of Lake Jennings, the Helix Water Board will have many important issues to address. Our forum again for Lemon Grove mayoral and Helix Water Board candidates will be this Wednesday, September 21st, starting at 5 o'clock at the Lemon Grove Library.
Santee will soon have a new mayor for the first time in 16 years, as well as an opportunity for new faces on the city council. On Thursday, October 13th, a Santee candidates forum will be held from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. at Rio Seco School, 9545 Cuyamaca Street in Santee. The forum is co-hosted by the Santee Solutions Coalition and the Santee Mobile Homeowners Action Committee. It will be moderated by the League of Women Voters. You'll be able to hear directly from mayoral and council candidates on their visions for Santee and ask questions about your own concerns, too. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The La Mesa First United Methodist Church will host a public forum for La Mesa City Council candidates and important ballot initiatives. The forum will be held on September 28th, with a candidate meet and greet at 6:30 and the forum itself beginning at 7 p.m. This November, three candidates are vying for two seats on the La Mesa City Council: incumbents Christine Alicio and Ruth Sterling, plus challenger Colin Parent, an attorney and environmental advocate. La Mesa voters will also be asked to weigh in on whether or not to legalize medical marijuana clinics in the city limits, as well as voting on a school bond measure, a regional transportation initiative, and the largest number of statewide ballots initiatives ever. The La Mesa United Methodist Church is La Mesa's oldest church, now more than a century old, and has long been a fixture at providing public forums for discussion of important issues impacting La Mesa. The church is located near the corner of Palm Avenue and La Mesa Boulevard, and again, that forum will be held on September 28th, starting at 6:30 p.m.
How you gonna keep 'em down on the farm after they've seen Paris?
This is Jonathan Goetz with East County Magazine's Agricultural Report. Legislation to establish overtime pay for farm workers in California has been signed into law by the governor. The new law will require overtime pay for farm workers who work more than 8 hours a day or 40 hours a week, just as workers in other industries already receive. The measure was authored by San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez, who calls the signing a historic righting of a 78-year wrong. She adds, "The hundreds of thousands of men and women who work in California's fields, dairies, and ranches feed the world and anchor our economy. They will finally be treated equally under the law. The overtime pay won't happen right away, but will be phased in from 2019 to 2022. California's farms and ranches bring in about $54 billion in revenue a year, but the median income of a California farm worker is just $14,000. The measure, Assembly Bill 1066, was opposed by the California Farm Bureau Federation, which represents farmers. The bill's supporters included San Diego legislators Shirley Weber and Marty Block, both Democrats who co-authored the measure. It also drew support from presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, who wrote, "It reflects our shared commitment to fair and humane working conditions for those whose labor feeds our nation and much of the world."
If you're hiking in California forests, be sure to wear bright colors to make sure you can easily be seen. Deer hunting season opens this Saturday, September 17th, in most zones in the state. Hunters are reminded that lead ammunition is now prohibited in state wildlife and ecological reserves. Shooting remains banned due to wildfire danger on some public lands. Hunters can get current information on forest closures at wildlife.ca.gov in the hunting section by clicking on Area Alerts. Hunting deer requires a license from the state, and all hunters must file a report even if their hunt proves unsuccessful. The sale of hunting licenses and tags brings in about $25 million each year to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. That money is used to fund enforcement of fish and wildlife laws, habitat conservation, reforestation after fires, and studies on wildlife populations and migration. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. If you think those hot August nights seemed even hotter than usual, you're right. Last month was the warmest August in 136 years that NASA has kept land and sea records. The last time it was this hot, back in 1880, James Garfield was president, France was building the Statue of Liberty, Mark Twain was busy writing Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, the first outdoor electric light bulb was installed in a street lamp, and Science Magazine had just begun publishing with funds from inventor Thomas Edison. Times were changing then as now. The 1880s brought a second industrial revolution fueled by growth in railroads, rise of the steel industry, factories, and the first skyscrapers, invention of the telephone, and the internal combustion engine to power automobiles, setting the stage for pumping increasing amounts of carbon into the atmosphere. Today, it's not just August that's the hottest on record. Annual temperatures since the 1880s have risen steadily as well, shattering record after record on a steady upward trend. That rise corresponds to the increase in greenhouse gases pouring into the atmosphere from coal-fired power plants, automobiles, and other fossil fuel emissions.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a health alert. A bat found at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park last week has tested positive for rabies. The County of San Diego Health and Human Services Agency reports the bat was found alive on the ground on Friday, September 9th, near the entrance to the Oasis Deli in Nairobi Village. The bat was not one of the park's animals. Rabid wild bats were also found at this location on June 11th and July 10th. Rabies in humans is almost always fatal unless a vaccine is properly administered after exposure. Rabies transmission can occur from a bat bite or if a bat's saliva comes in contact with a cut or an abrasion or with a person's mucous membranes such as eyes, nose, or mouth. County health officials want to know if anyone who was in the park on Friday, September 9th, directly handled the rabid bat. If you or someone in your family or group had contact with that bat, call the County of San Diego Health and Human Services at 619-692-8499. People should always stay away from bats and other wild animals to prevent possible exposure to rabies, the county's top health official, Wilma Wooten, says, adding, if you see a bat, dead or alive, don't touch it. You can help prevent rabies by keeping pets up to date on rabies vaccinations and receiving prompt medical advice if you are bitten or exposed to a potentially rabid animal. Rabies is not uncommon in wild bats in San Diego County. If direct contact with a bat does occur, wash the affected area thoroughly with soap and water and get medical advice immediately.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This is Rebecca Williamson.
And I'm Jonathan Getz, guest hosting Destination East County.
This week's Destination East County includes the Julian Music Festival, concerts by Sirens Crush, and the Grossmont Symphony and Master Chorale. And take a hike to the Valley of the Moon.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including Julian Apple Days, Oktoberfests in La Mesa and El Cajon, and Oktoberfest and Over the Line Tournament in Santee, a Marty Stewart concert in downtown El Cajon, Stockzilla at Santee Lakes, the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous, Open House with Firefighters, a tailgate barbecue contest in Spring Valley, and Haunt Fest on Main.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Sirens Crush, a high-energy dance band that's one of the hottest entertainment acts in town, will be performing live at El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert Night this Friday, September 16th. The modern pop and dance music concert will get you moving and grooving from 6 to 8 p.m. at Prescott Park in downtown El Cajon. For details, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Children of all ages are welcome to come to the Alpine Library for Funtastic Friday on September 16th at 3:30 p.m. for a hands-on demonstration on how to grow milkweed to attract monarch butterflies. Kids will also learn about the life cycle of the monarch butterfly and why it is so important to grow milkweed. Every participant will go home with a kit which includes milkweed seeds and many other items. For more information, you can email wildlifehabitats@aol.com.
Hakumba hikers and walkers invite you to a full moon hike to the Valley of the Moon. This 5-mile, 4-hour evening hike to an otherworldly location in the desert just past the San Diego Imperial County line near the Mexican border is rated hard. Meet at 5 at the Hakumba Spa. Bring a flashlight, plenty of water, and wear sturdy shoes. For questions, you can contact hike leader Bill Pape at 619-766-4927.
Here's something to howl about. The Julian Music Festival on September 17th will benefit the California Wolf Center, which is working to preserve a rare and endangered wolf species. The music festival will be held on September 17th from 1 to 7 p.m. at Mingini Winery in Julian. The 47th Annual Music Festival will feature a diverse lineup of entertainment. For tickets and details, you can go to julianmusicfestival.com.
The Grossmont Symphony Orchestra and Grossmont Master Chorale opens its fall season with a 7:30 p.m. performance on Friday, September 16th at St. John of the Cross Catholic Church in Lemon Grove and a 2 p.m. performance Sunday, September 18th at All Saints Episcopal Church in San Diego. They will perform music by Beethoven, Wolf, Fauré, Bach, Tchaikovsky, and others. For tickets and details, visit the Grossmont Symphony Orchestra website at grossmont.edu/GSO.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The annual Julian Apple Days Festival offers weekend full of fun for the whole family on September 24th and 25th. It's part of the longer Apple Days celebration. The two-day festival will be held at Mangini Winery featuring apple displays, music and dancing, an antique tractor display, children's games and activities, gold panning demonstrations, a beer and wine garden, food and merchandise vendors, contests, and of course, apple pie. For more information, visit juliansca.com.
Welcome. You're invited to the largest October celebration west of the Mississippi, La Mesa Oktoberfest, from September 30th to October 2nd. This community event is spread out over nearly 6 blocks in La Mesa Village and features hundreds of exhibitors, family-friendly activities, German food, music, dancing, outfits, games, and, of course, beer. For more information, visit thelamesaoktoberfest.com.
The German American Club in El Cajon will host its annual Oktoberfest over 2 weekends, September 30th through October 2nd, and again on October 7th through the 9th. This Oktoberfest features a band from Germany, authentic German food from Bavarian pastries to an ox on a spit, plus German beers and folk dancers. Plus, you can dance to oompa music, polkas, and waltzes, and let the children enjoy a kid's zone.
You're invited to step back in time and enjoy an authentic 1800 to 1840s Rocky Mountain fur traders encampment at the Laguna Mountain Rendezvous from September 30th to October 9th. Day visitors and period campers are welcome. The Rendezvous of Mountain Men includes demonstrations of primitive survival skills, including cooking, tool making, tomahawk throwing, archery, and black powder shooting. The event will be held at the Mataguay Scout Reservation in Santa Isabel. For details, you can visit LagunaMountainRendezvous.com.
Santee's Chamber of Commerce invites you to an Oktoberfest, along with a party in the park October 1st at Town Center Community Park West in Santee. Oktoberfest will kick off at 9 a.m. with East County's first ever over-the-line tournament. Teams of three can sign up to participate in the double elimination style tournament, which will include both a men's and a women's division. Attendees can head over to Party in the Park from noon to 4 p.m. to cool down with the refreshments in the beer garden, get lunch from food trucks and vendors, and jam out with continuous music courtesy of DJ Eddie V. Both events are for ages 21 and over. For details, you can visit santeechamber.com/OTL.
Santee Lakes invites you to Stockzilla on October 1st and 2nd, when all 7 lakes will be stocked with 3,500 pounds of catfish. There will also be tagged fish and surprise giveaways. The most stocking will be in Lakes 6 and 7, which are reserved for campers. For more information or to reserve a campsite, you can visit SanteeLakes.com.
Marty Stewart, a member of the Grand Ole Opry in Nashville, Tennessee, and a multiple Grammy Awards winner, will bring his band's blend of traditional country, honky-tonk, and rockabilly music to downtown El Cajon at Prescott Promenade Park on Friday, October 7th from 5 to 8 p.m. Stewart is former lead guitarist for Johnny Cash, played bluegrass mandolin for Lester Flatt at age 13, and later performed with Willie Nelson and other well-known country stars before gaining fame on his own. Bring your dancing shoes to dance the night away under the stars. For more information, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Heartland Fire invites you to bring the kids to an open house at Fire Station 6 in El Cajon on October 8th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. You can meet the firefighters, the emergency vehicles, safety and health displays, and more. For more information, you can go to heartlandfire.org.
Fire up your barbecues and get your best recipes ready. The 7th Annual Spring Valley Tailgate Barbecue Festival is looking for participants in its annual barbecue competition. The event is sponsored by Cali Comfort Restaurant and the Marso Walchef Youth Empowerment Organization to raise funds for youth sports. The barbecue competition will be held on Sunday, October 16th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Troy Street in Spring Valley. Besides sampling barbecue, you can also visit a beer garden, shop at street vendors, enjoy live music, and plenty of family fun. For info on how to enter your amateur barbecue team, visit Cali, that's C-A-L-I, comfortbarbecue.com.
The 5th Annual Haunt Fest on Main will take place on Main Street in downtown El Cajon on October 21st from 5 to 10 p.m. Costume contests will be held on the Main Stage Theater, Main Street Stage. There will also be carnival rides and crafts, games, a car show, candy challenge, kids zone with outdoor movies, face painting, a pumpkin patch, inflatables, rock wall, and performances by local dance groups. In addition, the Halloween-themed event features live music on two stages, including Out of the Ashes with Linda Rave and the Amazing 80s All-Stars. For more information, you can check out hauntfest.org.
That's all for this week. You can find details on all of these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in La Mesa. Today, my very special guest is John Linden. John is a longtime member, 14 years on the Helix Water District Board, and he's running for re-election. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam.
Now tell us which seat number you're in and what some of the areas are that that includes.
I'm in Division 1, which covers from Old Highway 8 on Pepper Drive all the way up through Fletcher Hills and part of La Mesa.
Okay, very good. And John is one of four people running for that seat. So, John, as an incumbent, can you look back on your years on the board and tell us what you consider to be some of the most important achievements that the board has made and any of the votes that you're most proud of during that time on the board?
I think probably the most important was the upgrade of our treatment plant, the Levy treatment plant, to ozonation, which is the state-of-the-art process of providing clean water to our customers.
Very good.
And also, we have a 10-year cast iron replacement program, which is online right now, and we're delaying some of the less important parts of that to try to keep our water rates as low as possible.
Speaking of water rates, that's probably been the biggest issue in this election. Some of the challengers out there are running on a platform of wanting to reduce water rates or at least oppose any future raises. You have voted consistently for some water rate hikes in recent years, including the most recent that was a 5-year rate hike instead of doing it 1 year at a time. Can you explain to our listeners why you voted for the increases and felt that those were necessary?
Yes, that's a good question, and obviously on everybody's mind. The reason for the rate increases, we have a $1.5 billion infrastructure at Helix, which has to be maintained. And just to remind folks, there's $1,000 million in $1 billion, so it's a lot of increase in operating systems that we need to maintain. So, in order to do that, since the customers, and I want to thank everybody in the Helix Water District, of the conservation they've done.
Yeah.
Because we're using 90 gallons of water per person. The average in San Diego County is 140 gallons, and 10 years ago it was 175 gallons.
So the ratepayers in the Helix District really did step forward when asked.
Absolutely.
And do their part to conserve water.
Absolutely. But the infrastructure has to be maintained. we're long-time planters, which is 50 to 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to provide the water, we have to charge for our infrastructure because we replace our pipes at 50 years. Okay, now the long-term planning, we have a 10-year program on the cast iron replacement. Now, some of the not high prior, low priorities, we are delaying. We've reduced our employees by 19 positions, and we have increased the automobiles. We have 75 automobiles and 53 heavy equipment that are maintained, and we're delaying the replacement of these vehicles using over 100,000 miles each,
mm-hmm.
which delays having to replace them. However, our operations center keeps track of each vehicle, so if our maintenance increases above what we expect, then we would replace that vehicle.
Yeah. What's the reason for the 5-year increase instead of just voting for it 1 year at a time when you know what the costs for that year for the water are going to be and so forth?
Okay. What our staff did is they estimated what the water rates would be for the next 5 years based on previous years. So when we voted for that, we saved about $100,000 in expenses. And at the same time, we revisit the rate each year. The public can come in and hear the information.
They can, although there wasn't as much notice this time as there has been in the past for that, where usually those meetings would be held at night and everybody, you know, who worked could come there.
Well, that's because the 5-year plan is already in effect. So all we're doing is saying, hey, if we don't stay within that range of rates, we have to revisit our Prop 213.
Okay.
So
213 is, for those that don't know, is a ballot initiative passed a few years ago that basically requires notice go out in the ratepayer envelopes and so forth so that everybody has plenty of advance notice of any rate changes.
Yeah, and we can only charge the actual cost of delivering the water. And mm-hmm. we are a state agency.
Yeah.
Controlled by the state and by the governor's office and so forth. So we have to adhere to that.
Yeah. Now, the Helix Water District recently sued the County Metropolitan Water Authority, and I understand that you've had a settlement in your favor. Can you tell us what that's right. going to mean for ratepayers?
Yeah, here's what happened. We were overcharged by Metropolitan for quite some time, and we tried to negotiate down to the right price, and they would not do it. So we had to take and file a lawsuit. Now, that lawsuit's gone through the courts, and the 24 agencies are members of the County Water Authority, which is our wholesaler. So what happened is the wholesaler, County Water Authority, sued Metropolitan,
mm-hmm.
won an action of $230 million. Now, that's an appeal right now by Metropolitan. But should we win that, the final, which is hopefully about a year and a half away, then that money that would come back to Helix for our overcharge would be, and we've already passed this, it would also provide the reduction in our water rates for the customers who were overcharged to begin with.
Okay, so there would be some ratepayer relief coming
that's
down.
That's right, there would be some relief. And we've already voted that that's where that money will go.
Okay. We've talked quite a bit about rate hikes. One of the things that I asked all the challengers running, it's really easy to say, hey, I'm running to reduce rates, but you have to have a plan for how you might do that.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue that some of them raised was the idea of what's called water budgeting, which, as I understand it, is where you look at households and you don't just have mm-hmm. three tiers like Helix does out in Padre. I think they have five, but they actually go out and look at things like how many people are in the household, how big is the property, how many pets or animals do you have, and come up with an allotment that's, you know, not just a one-size-fits-all, so to speak. Could that be done at Helix? Would you support the idea of looking into that or oppose it, and why?
We've already looked into that quite a while back. And since we're the largest water agency, with 275,000 people that we serve, the cost of doing that would be overridden by the savings. All right? So we decided that that was not for us to do. Mm-hmm. And that was the reason behind it. Now, Padre does that, but Padre is much smaller.
So the costs are less.
So the costs are less. And there again, we provide water to Otay Water District, Lakeside Water District, and Padre Dam.
Mm-hmm. It's a big job.
And all their water rates are all higher, not Lakeside, but Otay and Padre Dam water rates are quite a bit higher than ours.
Interesting.
So from that standpoint, we're at the lowest one-third of all water rates of the 24 agencies in San Diego County.
Really? Interesting.
So, and at our size, that's quite remarkable.
Okay. John, when we recently interviewed one of your opponents, he said that one of his ideas for cutting costs was to reduce the salary for the manager of the district. He pointed out that it's higher than the salary for the director for the state of California. And you've told me that you would like to respond to that, so go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Miriam. I did a study of all the general managers of the 24 agencies in San Diego County. Now, if you'll remember, we're the largest agency.
Yes.
And our general manager is one of the lowest paid in the county, yet we're the largest agency. And what I call the sister agencies of Otay and Padre, those general managers make more than our general manager, and they're smaller agencies.
Interesting. So how would you attract somebody qualified if they can just go to a neighboring agency and
earn more money for serving fewer people?
Yeah, and so clearly our general manager is not overpaid.
All right, appreciate you clarifying that. Let's move on and talk about the future of Lake Jennings. Another issue your board has had to wrestle with is when you took back the management or ownership of Lake Jennings from the county. Initially, it was in the red. It was losing a lot of money for the ratepayers. And there was a vote taken initially to close the lake, and Director Scalzitti came forward and said, wait a minute, give me a year to come up with a committee and a plan to save it. And they came forward with various ideas to raise money through improving campgrounds and teepees and canoe rentals and various other things. And I understand that it's now back in the black again. Is that correct, or very close to it?
Well, here's what happened. We took it back from the county. And over the years, it's been quite an expense to the agency. Now,
yeah.
How do we keep water rates low? We have to look at everything we're doing.
You initially were for closing the lake at first. Is that correct?
Well, we were never going to close the lake. We were going to close the campground, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what happened is the two of us, Director Scalzetti and myself, mm-hmm. were on the committee
mm-hmm.
to revisit that and look at how it might be a profit, a profit line.
So you were involved
and
in
we did
figuring
that.
Out the ways
and
to
so
make it profitable.
Since Director Scalzetti, that was in his division. I said, there's no point in me sitting on there. You go ahead and take care of it. But what was happening is, when we were looking at the statistic, only 1% of our Helix customers were using the facility.
Interesting.
So we are not set up as a water district with a park budget.
So you felt it was benefiting people
so we looked
in other areas.
A couple hundred thousand or 300,000 loss each year. And said, we've got to take a look at this and see if we can bring it back to a profitable, at least even.
Yeah.
And so we brought somebody in that had experience in that area, and she's done a fantastic job. And we're on all the internet, and we're in all the advertising and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Good
and
to
it's
hear.
Coming back.
Yeah.
And so it was never wanted. We never wanted to shut it down. But there again, we had to look at it from a business standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a businessman.
Yeah.
Everything I look at is what is our cost of doing business.
Yeah.
Keep it as low as possible.
Tell us what business you were in, by the way. I should have asked that to begin with.
Oh, well, I have an insurance, a brokerage agency.
Mm-hmm.
So we deal with businesses, we deal with individuals and so forth. And I will say that all my experience in my business, I don't know a single company that we insure that is more efficient than Helix Water District. And I know there's always a bash on government agencies, but believe me, we at Helix are very proactive, mm-hmm. long-term planners out 100 years to protect our water source. And when you turn the faucet on, water comes out.
Yeah, the district has a very long history. It's been around since the 1880s.
1886, that's when Geronimo gave up to the cavalry. To give you an idea how long ago that
wow.
was. And that was the flume in Lake Weyamaka, which we own.
Yeah, the original sort of log ride, so to speak, it brought the water down from Lake Weyamaka to the La Mesa area.
And I might add, why did they do that? They realized the Continental Railroad had come in, and they realized that we're in a drought area. This is a desert. And they realized without a dependable supply of water, they're not going to be able to grow San Diego. So the business community, everybody got on board.
True.
And that's why they did it. They were really proactive.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't be here today had it not been for the early planners of water.
Yeah, and we've certainly seen some changes to improve water storage also. Things like the dam raise at San Vicente, for example. Was Helix involved in that?
Yes, we're one of the 24 agencies, the County Water Authority. So what we've done infrastructurally in the county through the Water Authority and, mm-hmm. and also in cooperation with San Diego City, we raised the dam in San Vicente.
Mm-hmm.
We built one at Old Liebenheim.
Mm-hmm.
And Lake Hodges, we have a hydroelectric.
Interesting.
That we sell the electricity to the San Diego Gas and Electric Company.
Yeah.
And gives us a profit of over $1 million a year.
Very good.
And we're now visiting San Vicente to see if that might be another process for hydroelectric.
Yeah. You mentioned that when we were talking before we came on the show, you were mentioning to me that districts that don't approve rate hikes have sometimes had some negative consequences. It's very easy. Probably every ratepayer out there wishes they could pay less money for their water. I certainly wish I could. I'm in this district too. But there can be some downsides. Sometimes people get what they pay for also. Tell us about that.
Okay. Well, you either pay today or you pay tomorrow and much more tomorrow. So what's happened is one of the northern water agencies had a board of directors that wouldn't take any rate increases.
That was in Rainbow.
That was Rainbow Irrigation District. And as a result of that, the infrastructure fell apart, and they were going to go bankrupt, and the state of California had to bail them out.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a great example of how you have to be realistic. And I'm a realist. You have to pay where the infrastructure is having to be repaired.
Sure.
Or you're going to have a problem in the future.
Well, we've all seen Flint, Michigan as sort of the worst case example of if a water district isn't properly maintained or wise decisions aren't made, what can happen? So I guess the question really comes down to where is that balance between how much revenue does a district really need to have to make sure they can cover the infrastructure without it being excessive or, you know, gouging the ratepayer?
Water is the oil of the 21st century. We don't have life without water. That's how important this subject
yeah.
is.
And true, and with climate, many would say climate change, things getting hotter, drier, it becomes more and more precious.
Some of this drought is man-made. Some of this drought is man-made. The Delta fish that they're...
The smelt.
Yeah. They are actually taking water from the people...
Mm-hmm.
To keep the fish in there, and the fish are very insignificant.
So the amount of rainfall certainly isn't man-made, the fact that there's less rain, but the fact that maybe some water that could have been diverted here and elsewhere hasn't been, that part arguably one could say man certainly has had a hand in with those environmental decisions.
Well, another problem that's really government problems. See, we felt in San Diego County, in 1991, we were buying 95% of our water from Metropolitan. We had that drought and lost 50% of the water from Metropolitan because of the drought.
Huge.
We sat down at that time and said, we've got to become less dependent on outside water,
mm-hmm.
okay, imported water.
Very tough position to be in.
So what we did is spent that $2.7 billion on our infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So now... we have a more than a six-month supply in our reservoirs. So if we have an earthquake, which we're going to have, and the levees and so forth are going to disintegrate up in Central Valley, and what will happen is we won't have any water coming in from up there.
Mm-hmm.
So we are set to protect ourselves, and we're the only county that's been proactive in doing this. But it costs money to do it.
Sure. On another subject, the state recently raised some concerns about high mercury levels in fish in 150 different reservoirs in the state. That included 10 in San Diego and one in the Helix Water District, Lake Jennings. Now, again, to be clear, listeners, we're not talking about your drinking water. That's measuring out fine because it's such trace amounts of mercury. But the larger fish, like the bass, that eat smaller fish, have mercury that becomes concentrated up the food chain. And so it can pose some health problems if you were to eat these fish very often. What do you think the Helix Water District should be doing to, A, make sure the public is informed about that risk, and B, find out if there are ways to reduce it?
Well, number one, our treatment plant tests the water 600 times a month. Our water is purer than bottled water that you can buy. Our regulations on public water sources are the highest standard. So when you buy bottled water thinking it's better, it's not. So the first thing you should do if you want to save money on water is don't buy bottled water. Take it out of the tap. That's number one. Mm-hmm. And we have all kinds of campaigns to try to get people to do that. Okay. But talking to our treatment people, our water is safe, period. And we haven't visited the fish issue, but it's not an issue for our ratepayers in the water they drink.
No, we've made clear. The drinking water is fine. That's tested out fine. The state confirms that. The issue is for someone who goes out and catches fish and eats the fish, especially if they do it often.
Yeah. Well, I can't answer that because we haven't been told anything about that yet. But the state and the feds, in the environmental area, know that we're safe as far as our water supply is. So from that other angle, we'll probably find out, but I don't think there's anything we can do about that. We actually buy so many pounds of fish a year, and so that would be an issue with the people that provide us the fish. So that's where that is.
You know, the state also told me that it can go to the testing protocol, that they felt better testing protocol was needed in some places because a very tiny amount of mercury might not be detectable in certain tests and is not enough to matter for purposes of drinking. But if there's that little tiny amount that's in there and then the fish, you know, eats lots of fish that have absorbed this, then it can be a problem. So in other words, it isn't necessarily getting tainted fish from a hatchery, although that could happen too. But in some of these places, it can also be the fish absorbed trace amounts in the water itself.
Personally, my concern is our water.
We have the state of the art
for our water treatment. And so that meets all the requirements of all of the, so it's safe to drink.
Mm-hmm.
And the fish issue, that's another subject. That's for the fisheries and so forth and so on. But my concern is the water we drink.
Okay.
Yeah.
One more question, and that is regarding the sand mining project out in Lakeside. Mm-hmm. A little background on this. A few years ago, the Helix Board, there was some litigation over a golf course deal on that land that Helix owns out there in the El Monte Valley, had gone south, fallen through, and so the district voted to sell or lease that land out there for sand mining purposes, I understand. And there was a deposit put down of $1 million up front for it, and some additional money, several million more, that needs to be paid by the end of next year, as I understand. I believe you supported that vote initially. There's been a lot of controversy, however, over the sand mining project itself. Many residents out in that valley are very concerned about it because of valley fever spores in the sand and the noise and the dust and you know, various environmental issues. Although in the end, it's supposed to wind up being a preserve in 15 or 20 years when the mining is done. So I would like to know, if you had it to do over, would you vote the same way? And secondly, if the mining company is not able to make that second payment at the end of next year, would you consider giving them more time, or would you just say, nope, that land is going to revert back to Helix, which is the option Helix has on that?
Okay, here's what happened. When I came on the board, they had leased out that property, and they finally took it back, and I made the comment. I said, now that originally was our source of water, groundwater. Okay?
Yeah, there was
because of San Diego River, mm-hmm. We owned 7 miles of that river. Okay? So that was not needed any longer. And I said, we are in the water business. We're not in the real estate business. Let's stay with the technology we have, which is water. Okay? So procedurally, a federal agency, a state agency, if you decide to sell a property, you have to first go and offer it to all the other public agencies.
Okay.
Okay? We did that. We had a number of appraisals on the value of that. And the idea was, it was surplus property, let's get rid of it. That's the ratepayers' money, let's put it back mm-hmm. in our coffers and help keep our water rates. Well, okay.
So did any of those agencies show an interest?
No. No agency showed an interest. So we put it on the market, and when the sale was completed, based on the real estate appraisals,
mm-hmm.
We're not in the real estate business, so that we went with that.
Okay.
And the down payment was $1 million non-refundable.
Okay. So you get to keep that million even if the project
falls
through.
That's right. Exactly right. And the balance, $7 million, is due by December 31st of next year. Now, the actual sand mining and so forth and so on, that's a 30-year process. Mm-hmm. That's a long-term process. We don't want to get involved in any of that.
And they've actually, the most revised version of it has it down to 12 or 15 years now. I think they did cut down the length of it and respond to some of the community concerns.
Well,
but it's still a long time.
Yeah, all the information I've seen is 20 to 30 years. Now, the regulations that go with that are extensive.
Yes.
Know? And evidently the regulation for that property allows sand mining.
It is in the zoning. Has been for at least a couple of
decades. Now, the way I understand it, the River Conservancy, when all this is through, they're working with each other, the people buying the property, and that will eventually be a park.
Right. They are working toward a full restoration
now,
someday.
I'm very concerned, as everybody is, that the people that own property there are not impacted, so forth and so on. Now, the positive part of that, from the way I understand it, is the trucking will be at the west end.
Correct.
So that it won't be going through the communities on their narrow roads.
Okay.
You know, so it shouldn't impact them that much. And anything about dust and so forth, they have to water that down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a construction.
Yeah.
Process.
Yeah, so hopefully they'll do their best to mitigate it. So I guess the question remains, if for some reason they can't come up with the rest mm-hmm. of that money that's due at the end of next year, what do you think should happen?
Well, we would, at that time, see, I'm one member of the board. There's 5 members.
Right.
So we would sit down with staff, as we do on everything, and let them present us what options would be reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would vote on that and go by that process. So, I can't frankly imagine, with all the costs that they have up front with the city, with the county and so forth and so on, all the environmental people, that they wouldn't want it to go through. And I hope it does, because we can use that money to cut our water rates.
Mm-hmm. John, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know that I haven't specifically asked you about today?
Well, I would just like to brag on Helix Water District.
Okay.
The length of time I've been on the board and all the actions we've taken and the responsibilities of the board members, doing the right thing for our ratepayers. Our number one priority, frankly, is service. customer service. We get a number of letters every board meeting from our customers who are bragging on the people that helped them solve a problem they had. Okay? So this is on, you know, for somebody to sit down and write a letter, they have to be quite impressed.
That's true.
To send that letter. And so we read that. Deanna Verbeck, our president this year, reads those letters, and we congratulate our staff for the great service they're providing. Because
okay.
That's number one. We don't have any competition, folks. So we have to be better, okay? Because we don't have any competition.
Mm-hmm.
So our service and everything is just over the top.
The district won an award recently, didn't they?
Yes. We won an award for good governance. The Special Districts Association of California gave us this award, which basically says that we are so much in open government, transparency. It's a transparency award,
mm-hmm.
that we're one of the top agencies in the state.
That's important. So many agencies are not. I know as press, it certainly is easier to find information on the Helix Water District than on, you know, many of the others that we need to deal with. John, which endorsements have you received for your campaign that you're most proud of and would like to share with listeners?
Thank you, Miriam. Joel Anderson, who is the California State Senate District 38, he's endorsing me. Brian Jones, who is the California State Assembly 71st District member. And Dr. Mark A., I call him A., everybody calls him A.
Yeah, Mark Arapostakis.
Yeah, and
Mesa
he's the mayor of La Mesa. And then, of course, Deanna Verbeck and Chuck Muse, and then Frank Hilliker of Lakeside, Doug Wilson, president of Padre Dam, yeah, and then Gary Croucher with Otay, and Mark Robach with Otay, and Mike Hogan, who's the president of the Santa Fe Water District. So there's a number of them.
Okay, thanks for sharing that.
Thank you.
John, if people want to get more information about you or your candidacy for the board, where can they go? Do you have a website or Facebook page or something?
The website is lindenforhelixwater.com.
And that's L-I-N-D-E-N.
L-I-N-D-E-N. And my business phone number, if you want to discuss something, or if you want me to come speak at some community civic organization, mm-hmm. I'd be happy to. I love to tell the story of the success of Helix Water District. We're an $88 million operation, and we have 145 employees. We've reduced our employees by 19, and we have an operation that 56,000 water meters.
Wow.
700 miles of pipeline. We are huge, and as a result, that infrastructure has to be maintained.
That is a very big responsibility, and as voters, I think it's very important to be as informed as you can, to learn as much as you can about the district and all of the candidates running. And I'd like to announce now that East County Magazine is going to be hosting a candidate forum for the candidates running in the Helix Water District Board. There are a total of 8 candidates vying for 2 seats, and we've had at least 4 of them, it looks like, that are going to be there. The forum is next week, and that is going to be at the Lemon Grove Library on Wednesday, September 21st, starting at 5:15. Doors open at 5, and the forum will be beginning about 5:15. And, John, I understand you're going to try to make it there after your County Water Authority meeting that day?
Yes, I am, Miriam. And I'd like to mention something about our staff.
Okay.
We have a professional staff. We set policy as directors. Carlos Lugo, our general manager, runs the operation. We have three departments within the agency, administrative, operation, and treatment. Each of those managers reports to Carlos. And everything that is an issue with the district, we have 10-year plans for planning,
mm-hmm.
and are brought to each year to us to what's closed and what's still open, and so forth and so on. Then the directors sit there, analyze all the information that the district gives us, and we make a decision. Because we set policy, we do not run the agency.
Okay.
But I thank you very much for the opportunity to discuss this matter.
Well, we certainly thank you for being willing to come on the show and talk about all the important issues at the Helix Water District. Listeners, If you just turned in, we've been speaking with John Linden, who is an elected director on the Helix Water District Board. John, thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.
Air pollution from oil and gas facilities in California will cause children an extra 12,000 summertime asthma attacks in 2025, according to a new study from the Clean Air Task Force. Researchers looked at the EPA's projection of emissions and found that by 2025, oil and gas plants will be emitting 20,000 tons of volatile organic compounds in the Golden State. Jacqueline Schroeder lives in Porter Ranch, the site of last winter's massive natural gas leak. She and her family had to evacuate their home for 4 months, causing great disruption for her 5-year-old son and twin toddler daughters who have asthma.
I'm obviously very concerned if I'm subjecting my children to poison every day. I happen to grow up here in Porter Ranch and had asthma as a child, and it's now being passed on to my children.
The report also found that California children will miss more than 9,000 days of school each year due to ozone smog resulting from oil and gas pollution. Janice Nolan with the American Lung Association notes that California is working on strict new rules to limit emissions.
As we've looked at it for years, a combination of heat and emissions and their terrain that keeps things trapped so that the ozone's able to cook well can create a big problem with ozone. And California, fortunately, has been leading the nation in trying to clean up some of those sources.
Paul Billings, also with the American Lung Association, supports new methane rules proposed by the federal government to limit waste of natural gas from flaring and leaks.
Air pollution remains a serious threat to the health of millions of people, and that oil and gas extraction is part of the problem, and if EPA takes steps to address regulating the existing sources, we can make tremendous progress towards reducing that burden.
You can track the locations of oil and gas facilities and learn about the risk your community faces on the website oilandgasthreatmap.com. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Liz Alpert with an Aztecs men's soccer report. San Diego State's Jerome Miefeld was named the Pac-12 Conference Men's Soccer Player of the Week for his efforts in the Aztecs' 2 home shutouts over University of Texas Rio Grande Valley and Memphis in the Courtyard Marriott San Diego Central Tournament. With this selection, the SDSU junior garnered the first weekly league accolade of his career and marked the second consecutive conference honor for an Aztecs player this season. Miefeld scored 4 goals on 5 shots this past weekend, recording a brace in each of SDSU's wins to earn the tournament's Most Outstanding Offensive Player award. The 6-4 forward provided the game winner in both contests to help the Aztecs capture the team title at their annual event and remain unbeaten on the year at 4-0-1. In SDSU's 3-0 triumph over UTRGV last Friday, Miefeld scored on a free kick in the 24th minute and added another goal in the 87th minute with an outstanding individual effort, weaving his way past 4 defenders before launching the shot from 10 yards away into the back of the net. He capped off his brilliant week in the team's 2-0 conquest of Memphis on Sunday with a penalty kick in the 32nd minute, followed by another dazzling strike in the 89th minute when he gathered a pass from DeBray Holloman and darted downfield before nailing the blast from 15 yards away on the right side. Through 5 matches this season, Miefeld leads the Pac-12 in 4 categories, including goals, points, goals per game, and points per game, and is tied for the top spot in the league with 2 game winners.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.